This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a terrific Friday, an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, where we have been having a real good time. So we're going to talk about Republicans being too pro-life, someone thinks they are. Someone is ready for Francisco Franco. Somebody is talking about the term fascism. Why do they love that term? All that and so much more coming up in the final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. I want to begin here with this one. Jesse, I was in my car with my wife when you described the superpower you wish you had to deal with drivers in the slow lane. I've told my wife the very same thing. Living here in the communist state of Colorado, almost always the offending driver is either driving a Subaru or a Volvo. You know why I love that email and why it made me laugh? My father, God rest his soul, I miss him to death. My father used to scream about Subarus every time he would get stuck behind one in Montana. In his mind, the entire, every problem on the road was a Subaru driver somewhere. Oh, look at this hippie, probably staring at the mountains instead of actually driving the speed limit. I can hear him ranting and raving about Subaru drivers. There's something about him. There's something about him. I don't know what it is. And it's a great car. It's a great car. Honestly, a Subaru Outback is a great car. But there's a type of person who drives that thing, and they're a plague, like a black plague. Jesse, how many crayons did you eat as a Marine? And how did that stereotype start? The whole Marines eat crayons thing, it came from the stereotype that Marines are stupid and barbaric in nature. And all stereotypes are based on at least some hint of truth. Remember, when it comes to the Marine Corps, it's known as the few, the proud. The Marine Corps is always going to have worse facilities. No question about it. We get the Army's hand-me-downs, worse weapons, worse everything. There aren't going to be as many Marines. The training is harder than anyone else's. If you've gone through Marine Corps boot camp, this is the only service where it's like that, and you decide you want to switch to a different service, Army, Air Force, Navy, whatever, you don't have to go through anyone else's boot camp because you've already been through the hardest one. If I was in the Marines and I wanted to go to the Army, they would have just handed me a uniform. But that also attracts a different kind of person. And this is not me. This is not me saying Marines are dumb. It's not that. But why did I join? I joined in part because that was the reputation. Hey, we're tougher. It's tough to do it. Tough to make it. Are you tough enough to make it? In part, I joined to see if I was tough enough. Now, that was very common. The Marine Corps, it invites a more rebellious, adventurous spirit, I'll put it that way. A more rebellious type of young man is going to join the Marine Corps. Somebody with an interest in, you know, getting some training for a career afterwards. It's not that you can't do that in the Marine Corps. You absolutely can. But if that's really your main focus, really, the other branches are going to be better for that. There's going to be more opportunity in the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. There are going to be better opportunities, better facilities, better food, better. It's just going to be better in the other ones. If you kind of want it to suck, then that's going to be the Marines. Now, what kind of person signs up intentionally for the one that's going to suck the worst? What kind? A different kind of person. And sometimes, little dumb. Can be. Not always by any stretch of the imagination, but sometimes can be a little dumb. You follow that down to the inevitable road. They say Marines are so stupid, they eat crayons. And yes, I've seen buddies do it just out of boredom. It's Marines. Oracle. I've seen people siloed off more and more in their own ideological camps over the past couple weeks. I'm guilty of this too. One camp doesn't think anything is happening because they're not political. the media elite, street communists are using the momentum to push harder with lies and violence. The third camp is what I assume is us, your audience, and others who pay attention. We can see what is happening and try to tell people this is madness. I don't see how society can come back together. We live in two different worlds. So what now? Well, we do live in two different worlds. There's no question about that. But don't write off America because we are in the middle of a revolution, a communist revolution. The communist revolution is intended to divide. It is the whole point of it is not just the toppling of the government. They need to break up society in order to topple the government. We have a lot of them here. We can't do anything about that now. Well, we could do things going forward, but you can't snap your fingers, and I can't snap my fingers and remove the violent, subhuman, demonic street animals who now reside inside of our country. They have been nurtured and nurtured and nurtured for years, and now they're here. It doesn't mean we're finished, but it does mean there are going to be some bumps in the road as we navigate this, and some of those bumps are going to be quite painful. I've warned you already. There will be more people who will die. There will. There are going to be more assassinations. There's going to be more. There's going to be more. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better. But that doesn't mean it's over. As far as the people who are just kind of not political, I'm checked out. Oh, it's football season. If Norm hasn't woken up yet, there's a good chance he never will. And that sucks. I don't like it. I don't celebrate it, but it's always been that way. It's always been that way. The people who actually run a country, the people who actually take power and run a country, are generally simply the most committed. I talked yesterday about how many Bolsheviks, how many communists, how communists in general, when they're doing the revolution, are a teeny tiny percentage of the country because communism is not popular. You know how many communists were inside Moscow? Well, how many Soviets were operating during the revolution at the beginning of it? You know how many there were? I'm talking committed party members. About 2,000. 2,000. It's nothing. But they were committed. And how many people opposed them? Yep, same kind of amounts. It's always the committed minorities fighting for control. We just have to make sure we win. We have to make sure we win. And you have already, now there's more work to do. We always have more work to do. We know we have to be activists. We know we have to take back school boards. We know we have to take back our communities first. We get all that. But remember, we also did the work and got Donald Trump back into the White House. We have Trump in the White House. We have the Senate. We have the House of Representatives. On top of doing the work, we need these people to go full steam ahead and do what we elected them to do without hesitation. We cannot have this Republican way of thinking, well, what if they do it back to us? The next time these communists take power, no matter what you do now, they are going to do far worse than even they did under Joe Biden. Communists only know how to escalate. I'm going to ask you this in case you don't believe me. I'm going to ask you a question I've asked you before. Do you know any Democrats? Has a single Democrat in your life, one, have they ever expressed the tiniest amount of regret that they arrested their Republican opponent multiple times? Chris is laughing. I've never even heard of a single Democrat who thinks that was wrong. These people are broken beyond belief. They don't think they did anything wrong before. If anything, the lesson they took from it was, we didn't go far enough. How could the right ever rise again? Clearly, we didn't smash them hard enough. That's the lesson Democrats took. No matter what we do now, they are going to behave like animals the next time they take power. So we have to use this time we have to take apart the Democrat machine in this country because it is breaking the country apart and creating violent assassins. We have to break it up. We need the Trump regime to do it. We need Pam Bondi to do it. But by the way, some help from the House or Senate would sure be nice. We cannot play it safe. It has to be full steam ahead, put down the pedal to the metal. We have to go get them. Now, uproot this communist insurgency and kick it out. So the next time the communists take power, whenever that is, they won't have quite the same number of tools at their disposal. Relief Factor is a tool at your disposal to get rid of your pain. Relief Factor can get rid of your pain. We take things to mask our pain for a few hours, and those things are terrible for us. Stop doing that to your body. Stop liquefying your kidneys. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free. I'm telling you, the stuff is miraculous. It was developed by doctors, but it's a supplement. It's a drug-free supplement. You take it every day. The longer you take it, the better it works. You will get 3 weeks of it initially. It's $19.95. That's 3 weeks of it. Once you get it and you start taking it every day, you will notice the pain in your life going down a little and down a little and down a little. And soon your back doesn't hurt anymore. Soon your knee doesn't hurt anymore. Soon you're done rubbing your hands because they hurt. ReliefFactor.com. Or you can call 1-800-4-RELIEF. Be pain-free. All right. I have a guy here. He's a Republican, but he doesn't understand why Republicans have embraced pro-life. He thinks he thinks pro-choice is better for the country. So let's talk about that in a frank, non-insulting way. I'll do the best I can. Next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So before we have this little abortion talk, I'm sorry, Dome is still doing this media tour, trying to sell her book, and it's just brutal, man.
It's invariably somebody would want me to take a picture to hug their child. And someone in the back would hand that baby over through the crowd.
Up to you?
People who would
bless the baby.
But pass the baby.
It's brutal. All right, so the guy asked. He says, hey, I voted for Trump 3 times. Vote for him again. I understand and appreciate the difference between good and evil. But in politics, why have Republicans embraced the pro-life stance with such vigor? I embrace every plank of the Republican platform except this. Pro-choice is better for the country. Why the divergence? Well, I'm not actually going to give you my personal opinion on it because I don't think that's necessarily what you're asking. Everybody who's ever listened to this show knows I am absurdly pro-life, and I always will be. I'm never going to waver on that. But as far as Republicans, why does the Republican Party embrace pro-life? Remember, we talked earlier in the show, you remember how the Democrat base is preventing the Democrat Party from moderating. They are now afraid of their base. In the Republican Party, the Christian church, and this applies to all of them, honestly. This applies to every single facet of the church in America. Protestant, the Catholics, LDS, it applies to all of them. Is extremely pro-life for very obvious reasons. That is a huge part of the Republican voting bloc. Donald Trump, because let's be honest, he's not that pro-life. He did about as much as you could do to try to walk away from this issue. He had him strip it from the Republican platform and things like that. And he would talk about how there need to be exceptions. And he did about as much as you could do to walk away from this issue. And he, who was very obviously personally pro-choice, even he, pro-abortion, I mean, even he would not come out and say, nah, I'm fine with abortion. I'm totally okay with it. Why? Because he understood quite well, I can maybe make these people a little mad. If I go too far, my base will abandon me. Remember, all politics, left, right, but it doesn't matter what it is. You are trying to bring in new voters, independent voters, the wishy-washy voter who votes this way one day and that way the other day, while at the same time holding your coalition together, holding your hardcores together. And that is a very, very difficult dance. Always has been, always will be. How do you hold the base together? Well, kind of moderating a little on this and moderate. Well, you have to figure out where that line is. How far can you go? The Republican Party cannot, and I'm glad they can't because I'm pro-life, cannot go pro-abortion. They cannot do it because what would happen is, I don't think people understand how many evangelicals vote on that issue alone. I was involved in politics. Remember, I ran for Congress twice, and this was a gimme for me because I'm so pro-life, so it wasn't a threat to me. But we would go to different churches. And there were some churches, this was in the Tucson area, who would let me speak, or we'd have events where the church group would get together and it would be essentially a fundraising political event. And I cannot tell you how many people I talked to, that was their only issue. It was their only question. How are you pro-life? Yes. How pro-life? And then, of course, my answer for those people would always be satisfactory. If I had gone the other way, if I had been wishy-washy about it, they either would sit it out or they'd vote for the Democrat. That issue, the issue of life, even if it's not your thing, even if you're not passionate about it, or maybe you're even pro-abortion, I understand that, but you have to understand for the people who are passionate about it, it's their everything, and they will not sacrifice on it. They simply will not. I'll tell you this right now. You know how much I hate communists. If a Republican, any Republican, actually came out and said, I'm pro-abortion, I'm not pro-life at all, I would never vote for that person, ever. I don't care if they're running against AOC, Jasmine Crockett. No, I wouldn't vote for them. I'm not going to vote for the communists. I'll stay home. I will not vote for it. That's me. I say that because that's a common way of thinking on the right, a very common way of thinking on the right. By the way, did you give to preborn yet? You know that preborn is tax deductible, right? Tax deductible. And you know, I tell you that the ultrasound costs $28, giving that young woman a free ultrasound. You know there's no limit. It's tax deductible. We've had people give them $50,000 before, multiple times. I'm not saying you have $50,000, but if you do, maybe life's been treating you well, consider saving some lives with it. Or $28 buys an ultrasound. Maybe you can't do that. Maybe you got $5. This saves lives. Giving women free ultrasounds saves lives. Go to preborn.com/Jesse and give what you can. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. Balding Bronco. I have a combat-related question about the Medal of Honor story of James Lindsay. You related how he charged the Germans with a bayonet. Whenever I hear or read about such stories in modern wars from World War I onwards, I am puzzled by the fact that close combat happened at all. Outside of some Jap jumping in your foxhole at night, how do soldiers get close enough for blade combat without getting hip-fired to shreds? I have no combat experience, so your take on this would be very interesting, says I can say his name. His name is Daniel. And it actually is a really good question, and it's an understandable question, because it happens a lot. How many Medal of Honor citations have we read that way? Bayonet fighting, fighting with bayonets, hand-to-hand fighting, sword fighting, knife fighting. How in the world can that ever happen in the era of guns? Why aren't you shot dead first? Let's discuss it next.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so? Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Friday, an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. You can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. It's a fascinating question. I'll read it again. Guy says, hey, combat-related question. Charging Germans with a bayonet. Whenever I hear or read such stories of modern wars from World War I onwards, I'm puzzled by the fact that close combat happened at all. How do soldiers get close enough for blade combat without getting hip fired to shreds. All right, so there are a few different things at play here. First, there's something about combat in certain areas that doesn't necessarily come across in the movies. It's how hard it is to see sometimes. Even in an environment where you would think to yourself, you should be able to see. Let's call it the desert. Let's say it's barren. Maybe a rock here or rock there, but it's fairly barren. It's clear, right? You should always be able to see. It's clear until bombs and bullets and everything else starts going off, and soon you can't see. It's dusty. It's smoky. It's this. It's that. So you can find yourself very quickly on top of an enemy, and you didn't see him. He didn't see you. In any kind of thickly wooded area, most definitely the jungle, this happened all the time. You can flat out stumble onto him, and it happened more times than you can count in jungle warfare situations, Vietnam, Japan, and so many others. You can just find yourself, oh, whoa, here you are. I told you before, when we did jungle warfare training in Thailand, we all commented on it when we spent our time in the jungle doing all these different exercises and sleeping in the jungle. You can't see. It's so thick. Everything is thick with the trees and the vines and the bushes that you cannot see anything. If you separated, look, in certain situations, if you separated 10 yards from your buddy, you might lose him. It's that thick. You're having to hack your way through it with a machete. Well, in situations like that, you can easily run into somebody, and now it's a knife fight. It's a bayonet fight. That's one. Two, weapons themselves. Another thing that doesn't necessarily come across in the movies is how long a magazine actually lasts on full auto. It's not long. It's not long at all. Chris, would you do me a favor? Because I actually forget. You know the bar, the Browning automatic rifle? Look up how many rounds a magazine took. So in World War II, for instance, the heavy machine gun, I mean, I know it's called a light machine gun, but it was the heavier weapon than the normal one, heavier than a submachine gun known as a Thompson or the one, the big heavy gun. It's the heavy one that an infantry squad would carry. It was known as the Browning automatic rifle. That's what it was. That's what you're hearing right here. They carried it with them. Fully automatic. Do you have any idea how fast that magazine would be over? It's 5 seconds. 20 to 40 rounds. Chris just looked it up. 20 to 40 rounds. 20 to 40 rounds. Do the math on this. At 500 rounds per minute. At 500 rounds per minute, how long does 20 to 40 rounds last? Not very. So if you're in a combat situation, let's say you're even 50 yards apart, but you're moving towards him or he's moving towards you. Do you think you're just going to be barking with that thing the entire time? Nope. What if you're both moving towards each other? You're closing fast. You could easily find your magazine empty and then not have time to swap out magazines. It's not an instant affair. So guess what? The K-bar is coming out and we're swapping blades. There's another aspect to it. Not just the magazine running out. We like to imagine, again, movies do this to us. We like to imagine that ammo is endless. It's endless for them. It's endless for me. This goes to old Westerns where the guy pulls out a six shooter and somehow cooks off 20 rounds with the thing. It goes to war movies. No matter what, he always has another magazine to pull out and slam home. You know how many magazines we carried? We carried one in our weapon, obviously, and generally 4 to 6 out of it. One in it, 4 to 6, depending on your loadout, out of it. You know how fast that goes if I'm in combat? If I run out, we're shooting at each other and I run out, I don't have a ward. I don't have an ammo shop 2 feet behind me. Hey, can someone give me another six? When you're in combat and you run out, you run out. And now you're chucking grenades. You're pulling a sidearm if you have it. And if you're close enough, you're pulling out a blade. Or look, a rock, an E-tool. It's a shovel, a small shovel. You're pulling out what you can. We all in Iraq, we all had various knives. They let us carry whatever knives we wanted from home. My dad got me an awesome little SOG knife that was perfect. I had buddies that their knives were so big they were almost freaking swords, because it was just understood there may be a time where you're doing it. Now, what Chris just brought up, urban warfare. How quickly can you run into somebody? What if your weapon jams? Again, magazine runs out. He runs out of a room and slams into you. If he's touching me, let's say my weapon is an M16, which is the main weapon we carried. That's long. If he has run into me, if we're touching, if he's a foot away, and I try to deploy that weapon on him, I'm probably not going to make it. I have to, honestly, a knife might be a better option at that point in time. If he's a foot away, if I can't separate, what if he has a hold of me? I have straps all over me. What if he has grabbed me, and he will have grabbed me, and I can't separate? These are just a few of the examples. It's not as clean and neat and easy as people make it out to be. And as far as the James Lindsay Medal of Honor citation, if you missed that, just go download hour two of Monday's show, iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. You'll hear what he did. Guys who run out of ammo and they strap a bayonet to it and start charging, there's the fear factor as well. You know that people have gotten in gunfights inside elevators and both guys have unloaded every round without hitting a single shot? Did you know that? When your adrenaline is pumping and you're scared and it's easy to simply miss with everything. Now picture some dude charging at you with a bayonet. Human beings have a unique fear of being stabbed. It goes way deeper than being shot. It goes way deeper than being blown up. I have witnessed it. I've told you my fixed bayonet story multiple times from Iraq. You threaten someone with being stabbed. I don't know exactly why. I don't know the psychology of it, but it creates an elevated level of fear in people that is palpable. It is palpable. It is different. So imagine some big American, you're a German machine gunner, maybe your weapon's even jammed, and you look up, and I don't know how big James Lindsay was, but let's say you see some 6 foot, dirty, wild-eyed American charging at you with the blade sticking out the end of his rifle, getting ready to jam it into your stomach. Maybe you're not shooting all that accurately at that point in time because you're pooping your pants. Now, speaking of pooping your pants, how's your dog's digestion? How often does dinner come back up? You know that Rough Greens, on top of vitamins and minerals, on top of the probiotics, on top of the antioxidants, you know Rough Greens, it helped Fred's digestive issues. Your dog's tummy, we know what they eat. They eat freaking everything. They need help getting rid of that stuff in a healthy way. Rough Greens completely changed Fred's digestive system. Can't do anything for how dumb he is, but it totally changed his digestive system. Let Rough Greens help your dog. Your dog will have a shinier coat, better breath, more energy. People think Rough Greens costs money. No, the vet costs money. Rough Greens saves you money. You don't have to go to the vet as often. It's number one for a reason. RoughGreens.com, promo code Jesse. Or call 214-ROUGH-DOG, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, but we shall return on Monday for Medal of Honor Monday, and that'll be a good time. I hope to get to my Siege of Malta history show at some point in time next week. I'm not promising that. I don't know what the weekend brings. I have no idea what's on the family schedule because I have a wife who handles such things for me. I blindly wander through and she lets me know what the next obligation is. Am I going to have time to get it done? I don't know. Maybe. Ask Bob. I have no earthly idea. A couple news items before I get back to the emails. Trump said this on Fox News.
And we're going to look into Soros because I think it's a RICO case against him and other people. Because this is more than like protests. This is real agitation. This is riots on the street.
Wonderful to hear. Sean Duffy is the transportation secretary. Really good dude, by the way. We have an uncomfortable number of long-haul truckers in this country who are foreigners who can't speak English. It's killing people. It's killed multiple people on the highway. These gigantic weapons cruising down the road, some foreigner from a culture where they don't obey traffic laws and he can't read our road signs. It's a threat to the life of yourself, your family, and everyone you love. Sean said this today.
We're issuing an emergency rule that fundamentally overhauls who is eligible for a non-domiciled CDL. Now, this is not a proposal. This is a final rule. And it is effective immediately. Non-citizens will not be eligible for a CDL unless they meet a much stricter set of rules. Second, all states must immediately pause the issuance of non-domiciled CDLs until they can comply with our new rules. Nowhere in the country have we found a more egregious licensing situation than in the state of California. Investigators found that more than one in four non-domiciled CDLs were issued in direct violation of federal safety standards. Over 25% of these licenses, they were issued illegally.
California, man. California killing people around the whole country. Remember that semi killed that whole family in Florida? Where'd he get that license? California. Sean said this too.
What our audit has already discovered should anger every single American. Thousands of licenses that should never have been issued actually were issued. States are issuing licenses that extend months and even years beyond a driver's lawful presence in the U.S. This is a direct incentive to stay in our country illegally. Our second finding was that the current federal regulations are allowing dangerous, unqualified drivers on American roadways. This means that even when the rules are being followed, dangerous individuals who shouldn't be near a big rig are getting behind the wheel and causing crashes on our roadways. Eligibility requirements are deeply flawed and they're way too broad. The system, it's failed, and it's a national emergency.
It most definitely is. Now, before we get back to the emails, one more thing. Monique Worrell, one of these Soros-backed DAs in Florida, she refused to prosecute a man who was touching himself in front of children at a park in public. I'm going to play something for you just as a little reminder that they're not soft on crime. Take that term, throw it in the garbage disposal, then take it out of the garbage disposal once it's blended and light it on fire and watch it burn and never pull it out again. They're not naive. They don't have misplaced compassion. These people take these positions of power so they can ensure criminals stay in society, hurting you, your daughter, your son, your mom, your wife, your husband, and everyone else you know. Okay? They are pro-crime.
All things that are wrong are not illegal. And I'm not standing before you today telling you that what happened in that park was wrong. But I am standing before you today telling you that I trust the word of the attorney who was assigned to this case when he said, although those actions were wrong, he could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they were illegal.
They let these animals into your society on purpose. Basic part of every communist revolution.
And now,
here's a headline.
By the, go, you know the thing.
Emails
we didn't get to.
Hey, Beaver Slayer, you mentioned surviving back in the dinosaur days, but we all know you couldn't do it. You couldn't even catch a mouse. Actually, those mice are no longer there, no matter how that happened. But let's say you did kill a Triceratops with your Hellcat. What temperature would you smoke a Triceratops brisket to? Look, my brisket skills are unmatched on my Pitmaster pellet smoker. 200. Everything's at 200. Why are you shaking your head, Chris? What's wrong with 200? What? No. Chris said you should go for a 160 or a 180. I'll be honest, my pellet smoker only goes down to 200, so that's the temperature I prefer, is 200. Don't interrupt, Chris. I'm the brisket master, okay? Jesse, I'm truly mystified as to why leftists dominate academia. Is there something about them that gravitates to academia? Well, there's a bunch of things at play here. Why are there so many communists in academia? First, they sought out those positions on purpose because it gave them access to your children. That's one. Oh, man, I got something caught in my throat. Two, once they get there, they purge anybody who disagrees with them and only hire more of them. Three, this is not meant to be as insulting towards teachers as it's going to sound like, because I know there are so many wonderful teachers and the good ones do deserve all kinds of credit. There is a huge difference between having the book knowledge to teach something versus having the real world knowledge to actually do something. Some people possess both skills. Many people do not. Communists never do. They can't make it in the real world, so they find a way to leech tax dollars off of you somehow, like the blood-sucking mooches they actually are. Now, put your phone down. I'm going to try to be better about that this weekend. You go enjoy yourself, your family, and I will see you again on Monday, all right? That's all.
This is an iHeart podcast.